Welcome everyone to this week's Big Picture. Joining us on the show today is our founder and president of Financial Sense Wealth Management, Jim Poplava. And as you know, we try to identify the big trends and themes that you can invest around for the long term, which is exactly what we do at our firm. And some of the themes that we have been discussing over the recent years, particularly after 2020 with the COVID crash and a lot of the massive spending that came as a result, is the need to hedge around a persistent and long-term increase in the rate of inflation. We have seen that. We don't think that that is going away. We think that that is going to persist for the remainder of this decade, along with a number of other major themes that we are going to discuss today, all along the lines of why we at our firm are positioned in precious metals, oil, crypto, and technology. So not just commodities, but also with an exposure to tech and crypto as well. And we're going to discuss the reasons for that and how all these things fit together. So Jim, what are some of the major macro themes that you and your investment team are implementing in portfolios here at Financial Sense Wealth Management?
Oh, I'd like to begin and talk about, we are at a pivotal point in history. The macro and tectonic shifts that we're seeing globally in financial markets, geopolitically, Chris, are major, and they're going to impact the investment markets over the next decade and investing. And the point I want to make is we're not going back to what you saw in the last decade. You're not going back to you'll be having 3% mortgages or a 0.5% interest rate, or we're going to go back to $30, $40, $50 oil. That's not going to happen. We're going to see a lot more shifts. And what I'm going to identify them, and then I want to explore one in particular, and we'll talk about these themes and macro shifts and how they're going to affect how we're investing with our research team, what we're looking at, and then what this means for you as an investor. And the first one is fiscal dominance, where the U.S. government is spending is basically unsustainable, and how that will alter central bank policy going forward. We're also going to talk about how supply chain disruptions that came about with COVID in reshoring manufacturing back to our country, what that means. Modern monetary theory and the path towards inflation is not going away. Inflation is going to be a theme we will be dealing with throughout this entire decade. And also the path towards war. We've got a war going on in Ukraine. We got a war in the Middle East. We got proxy wars. And the U.S. has been at war since this new century began, whether it was the war, the second Gulf War, the war on terror. Now we've gone to proxy wars, another major thing that you've heard us talk about, but we're going to talk more about it. And this is why what you're seeing in the markets right now is the demise of the petrodollar. We're shifting over to the petro-yuan, and more importantly, the petro-gold. I don't need to tell our listeners, if you're watching the markets, gold is setting a new all-time record almost every day. We talked over the past how gold has been above $2,000 an ounce, now over $2,300, in my opinion, on its way to $3,000. Oil is heading higher, and because one reason, oil companies have been more circumspect on spending, inventories are drawing down, shale is starting to its decline slope. Saudi Arabia is pulling back on what they're able to produce. We'll get into a lot of these, and over the months ahead, we'll talk about some of the shifts that all of these are going to position our investment portfolios. But I want to spend just a few moments because this is a term, the media is behind this. They're not picking up on this. And it's just mind-blowing that they're not. I mean, we just crossed on March 26th, the national debt crossed $34.6 trillion. And what this is all reflective of is what we call fiscal dominance. Let me describe what that is. It's a situation where the government's debt and deficit levels become so high that they impair the ability of the central bank to control inflation through its traditional monetary policy. So how it works, higher debt and deficits require more funding. And you're going to see funding changes. The government right now has shifted, instead of long-term bonds, we're back to shifting to almost 75% of government financing now is on T-bills. And that's a show in itself. And you're also seeing that the Fed eventually is going to be forced to lower interest rates and do something that we call financial repression in yield curve control, where the Fed will actually do what it did in the last decade. They will be going out into the marketplace, buying long-term bonds to drive those yields down, because as the deficit gets bigger, we're adding now, I think it's about every 120 days, or basically every 3 months, we're adding $1 trillion. So, and sometimes 4 months. So we're adding $3 trillion of debt every year. And as we talked in the first hour with Jim Welsh about the macro environment, you know, even the CBO is saying we're going to be looking at $50 trillion in debt. And Chris, they assume no recessions over the next decade, which is unlikely. What this will end up doing, it's going to force the Fed to print money in a way they're doing it indirectly now by going to T-bills. And it's a dilemma. Basically, the central bank loses its independence because as they try to control inflation by raising interest rates, which they're doing now, and you know, unfortunately, we can't cover it today, why this is failing in the labor market and why it's failing on the inflation front. But the main reason, the government is pushing through massive, massive amounts of spending. We just passed a $1.2 trillion supplemental spending bill. And both parties are going along with MMT. It's just different priorities between the two parties. But I wanted to cover fiscal dominance because it is the main macro theme that is dominating what you're seeing take place in the economy and the markets.
So, Jim, given this macro environment, you highlighted a number of things that we're looking at here. What are some of the longer-term investment themes that we are implementing through the variety of portfolios that we manage here at Financial Sense Wealth Management?
Right now, given this macro environment, I have my investment team looking on a couple of things. So let's talk about something that's obvious. Energy transition. You've heard about the Green New Deal. We're trying to move from fossil fuels to clean energy, which is a misnomer in itself. But one thing that you're going to start seeing, and I want to just put out a warning right now, in the next 3 years, Chris, probably the next 4 years, because I don't see it happening this year, but starting between 2025 and 2028, you're going to start seeing more power outs and you're going to start seeing electricity rationing. And the reason for that is if we take a look at the grid, AI, which is the hot topic right now, they're estimating by 2028, AI alone will consume 25% of all electricity. Secondly, the cloud. Everything's gone to the cloud. That will probably consume about 10 to 15% of our electricity. Then crypto mining itself is a massive energy user. And then, of course, the transition to EVs. So one thing our investment team is looking at is the grid itself. We did a interview recently with David Tyson, his new documentary film, Grid Down, how vulnerable our grid is. And we saw that here in San Diego. Oh gosh, Chris, I'm trying to think of the year it was. There was a transformer on the border between Arizona and California. The transformer got knocked out for whatever reason, and the entire city of San Diego, I mean everywhere, the lights were out. It was pitch dark. You didn't see lights anywhere. So we're looking at companies that are going to be involved with building the grid, strengthening the grid. The other thing we're looking as a theme that you've heard us talk about is the lack of oil investments in ESG. And then you're talking about, you know, somewhere between this year, next year, you're probably going to see the Permian Basin, the last major shale play in the United States. We're already seeing a decline in the amount of output. And once that happens, that's going to be significant. One of the reasons you're seeing oil prices rise today, because shale oil is responsible for almost 100% of the growth of oil production globally has come out of U.S. shale. The other thing that you saw come out of COVID was supply side disruptions is reshoring. We're bringing factories. I have family that lives in Arizona. Taiwan Semiconductor, which is the powerhouse in chips, is building its second plant in Phoenix. And Chris, you know, I've been by it. It's almost a city. That's how large it is. And it's not just Taiwan Semiconductor. Intel is building a plant in Phoenix. Apple is building a plant in Phoenix. So we're reshoring. What does that mean inflationary? Obviously, We had globalization where we pushed manufacturing offshore. Now with deglobalization, factories are coming back to the U.S. AI and industrial robotics. California just passed a law where fast food workers are going to get paid $20 an hour. I think that went into effect April 1st. They've been doing interviews with restaurant owners. They're getting rid of the workers on the front line. You walk into a fast food place, you're going to go to a kiosk, and the next thing they're working on is robots that will make the burgers and the fries. So automation and robotics, and it's not too far in the future, and we'll see it in this decade, where people will be able to buy and employ domestic robots. And then finally, the war cycle, the proxy wars, and continuous warfare. We've been involved in some form of warfare. I think I'm just looking at our basically our defense spending, and it's now approaching almost close to $900 billion. U.S. defense spending is 40% of global defense spending. So these are some of the long-term strategic themes, because what we're more interested in, our research team, we're looking for something that will be a theme that is going to be investable for a longer period of time. I don't care what happens in the next 3 months. I care more about what's going to happen in the next 3 to 5 years. So these are the main themes that we're looking at in terms of using that in terms of the kind of securities we put into portfolios.
All right, Jim, well, let's talk about fiscal dominance and inflation. This has been obviously a theme that we've been talking about for many years, especially, like I said, right after 2020, when you made a big call right during that time in 2020 that investors need to get ready for higher rates of inflation. We were definitely on the persistent side of the inflation debate, not saying that this was going to be transitory or temporary, as the Fed was saying. And obviously, Wall Street is very much in line with thinking that we are going to see a return back to 2%. We disagree with that and think that we're likely going to be looking at higher than average inflation rates over the decade ahead. So tell us, what is your view on inflation long term and how this crucially relates to what we're seeing with, as you mentioned before, fiscal dominance?
Well, every 3 to 4 months, we're adding $1 trillion of debt. What does that mean? The Treasury has to go out and refinance that debt or raise the money to pay those bills. In addition to refinancing existing debt that's coming due, I think it's about $10 trillion a year that we're refinancing of old debt. And what's going to happen, it's going to get so large. Right now, this year will probably cost us over $1 trillion in interest alone, which, Chris, is almost 20% of all tax revenues now. And that's going up each year. So what is going to end up happening is the Fed will have to do what it did after World War II, when the debt to GDP ratio is about 300%. How did we get out of that? Well, we did it by inflating our way out of it and suppressing interest rates. And that's called yield curve control. It's what you saw in the last decade when the 10-year treasury got down to 0.5%. The 30-year treasury note was down to 0.5%. And that led to why you were able to refinance your debt, why you were able to get 3% mortgages. So they're going to have to go back and do that again to keep interest rates lower, because that lowers the expense for government. And the second thing they're going to have to do is they're going to have to not only suppress those interest rates, but in order to do that, they're going to have to do something. It's one of their toolbox. It's called quantitative easing, where you simply just print the money, go out into the marketplace and buy long-term bonds to drive down the interest rate. They did this after World War II. They did this. Greenspan did it in the 00 decade before inflation took off. Bernanke did it in the last decade, which is why we're in this bubble that we're in today. The other thing is individual investors dumping gold. They've been dumping massive amounts of gold by selling GLD and SLV. And what we've seen in a theme that we're going along with is central banks have been buying gold at the highest record level. Literally, I think last year was almost 1,300 tons of gold, where investors have sold 600 tons of gold. And so if you look how bull markets develop, something we picked up in the 00 decade, the first thing that happens in a bull market, the smart money sees the undervaluation, sees the opportunity, and they are early adopters. They're the first ones that go in and start investing. Eventually, the trend gets picked up by Wall Street, and then the second phase of a bull market is the institutions come in. And then finally, the last phase of a bull market is when individual investors. So we're riding the wave of smart money, which is central banks. And it's been the largest buying by central banks that we've seen in a long time. So one of the themes that I've had my team look at is we're looking at precious metal companies. We've owned them for a long time. We've added to them. And just we made a switch out of crypto, which I'll get into, and we're into the gold markets. And what are you seeing? On the day we're speaking, gold is over 2,300, hitting a new record. Silver has just crossed and surpassed its previous high of 2,650. It's over $27. And as our technicians have talked about, what we saw for the last 4 months, we saw the price of gold going up, but it was not substantiated and followed up by a movement of the gold stocks or a breakout in silver. We needed those two things to happen. They now have, and it's why the gold stocks are flying. It's why gold is setting new records and silver itself is breaking out. So a theme that we're invested in for this decade, and I'll get into, is we are moving from the petrodollar, where oil was denominated in dollars. Now it's the petro yuan, where a lot of oil sales to China and the rest of the world are taking place in yuan and also taking place with the settlement of gold. So if I'm Brazil, I'm trading with China, I accept Chinese yuan. Now, if I have excess yuan that I don't need to spend with trade with China, I just go to the Shanghai Exchange and I exchange my yuan for gold because China doesn't want Western investors interfering with its domestic market. So we're now transitioning to the petro gold, and it's one of the reasons why gold has been so strong over the last 3 years in relation to silver. Silver has been weak until recently. You're going to see silver break out. And, you know, I think we could see over $50 silver this year. And it's a possibility, Chris, if this trend continues and we continue spending and inflation ticks up, which it's doing now, we could possibly see $3,000 gold, in my opinion.
You know, Jim, it's interesting when you're mentioning precious metals and particularly the strong move that we've seen in gold more recently. One of our listeners emailed me and asked, hey, what's your view on what's moving gold currently? Is it, you know, is gold sniffing out World War III? Is it inflation picking up? And I mean, really, my response was exactly what you said, that a lot of it comes down to the fact that when we look at what happened during the COVID crash, we saw the rapid implementation of modern monetary theory here in the US. And that was with, you know, $6 trillion of spending now every year, starting last year. That's expected to continue this year, but a parabolic rise in US debt, quickly rising interest expense. Central banks around the globe, they're not ignorant of this. They're looking at the risks. And they see that the fiscal position of the U.S. is continuing to deteriorate. And the only way out of this is really to inflate away the debt. And why not diversify our treasury reserves and put a little bit more of that into gold? And so what they're doing is they're accumulating just every month record amounts of gold. A lot of the focus, though, as many people know, has been on crypto because crypto has overshadowed and eclipsed gold in many ways, just given its parabolic rise. We are invested, or we were invested in crypto in the lead up to the halving event of Bitcoin. So tell us, where are we currently positioned and what's your view on investing around crypto currently?
Well, one of the issues that we were dealing with last year is we wanted to get into crypto, but this was before crypto ETFs, which are now prevalent and becoming ubiquitous in the sense, I think there's 12 out there now. Europe's talking about doing the same thing. And so we found a technology stock that was the largest investor and owner of Bitcoin in the world. And so for us, it was liquid. And it was a way for us to get our clients involved. And it turned out it was probably one of the best performing stocks in the index in the last 2 years. So it enabled us to participate in crypto without actually owning it directly. We owned it indirectly. Now, we have just exited that trade and we'll be looking to get back into crypto, but we think we have a correction coming here, and we'll probably do that through an ETF. But it enabled us to take advantage of crypto and Bitcoin when Bitcoin was like at 26, 27,000 before it ran up to 73,000. So that has been something. Crypto is another asset category. It's accumulated, and now it is easier for investors to participate because we now have ETFs. So you don't have to worry about your wallet and keeping your ID and the things that you have to do if you're buying, let's say, Bitcoin directly or Ethereum or another type of coin. So that enabled us to do that because we began to research on this. And my investment team was looking at this. How can we get into crypto and put it into client portfolios where you couldn't actually do that as an investment advisor? And, you know, you would have to own it individually, which we were not able to do. So we tried and we came up with a solution, and that worked out quite well for us. Another thing that we're looking at is basically AI. And we began to invest in last year in AI in the summer of last year. And we were looking at more of the picks and shovels. It was like the great gold rush in California. The guy that made money was Levi Strauss making denims. So it was the picks and shovels, not the gold miners. So what we did is we saw a theme of chip stocks and software, and we thought that was the way to play it. And this technological revolution, Chris, you know, according to our research, I still think it has 2 or 3 years to play out. It's just in its early stages. You are seeing it with some of the big tech companies. We're using AI. One company we own is going to be working with drug companies using AI to help come up with new healing drugs. And they get not only a large fee up front, but they will also get a percentage royalty if that drug comes to the market. So AI is another issue that we see that's going to revolutionize. It's also going to be an area where you're going to see, quite honestly, you're going to see AI replace a lot of labor along with robotization, because one of the areas that we have right now is we have labor, we have strikes, labor unions. I think there were 675 labor union battles that were won last year. So as we reshore and bring money back, and as governments try to get more socialized, how does business cope with this to bring down the cost of producing goods and services? Two ways. Well, you're going to see robots and you're going to see AI. So that is an emerging trend that we are going to exploit. So our research team is looking at some of the better ways, the better companies who are going to lead in that area.
Jim, how about energy and electricity? Where does that fit into our long-term investment thesis?
You know, this is something we've had a number of guests on the show. We've had Simon Michaud on the scarcity of materials. We've had Robert Bryce on electricity. We've had David Tice on his new film, Grid Down, a documentary film on the vulnerability of the grid. And, you know, everybody's excited about AI, but what you don't realize, it is a massive consumer of electricity. It will consume 25% of the electrical grid by 2028. And that's not counting the cloud. And what you're seeing with this and the demand for electricity, unfortunately, our politicians don't have a coherent energy plan for electricity. So like we live in California, what do we see here? Brownouts all the time. And so what we're looking at and what are you seeing is the biggest producers of cloud computing, Amazon, number one, Microsoft, number two, what are they doing? They are adding, they're going to build near their cloud centers, micro nuclear plants to power it because they can't afford. Amazon gets most of its money from the cloud. And next to that, Microsoft is making a large area. So we're looking at nuclear power and what runs nuclear power. So we're looking at uranium. So we're identifying with this in an energy transition on the grid, companies that will be expanding the grid, repairing the grid in the documentary film, Grid Down, he talked about these transformers that are key. We used to make them, and now we only have, I think we're down to one company that makes them, and it takes 2 years to build. We have a shortage of transformers because, like anything else, we outsourced it, and it's now 10% of our transformers are coming from China, which leaves us very vulnerable. So we're looking at companies that are going to build and enhance the grid. So the research team is looking at not only just utilities that have nuclear power, that have wind and solar where it actually works. We're looking at companies that actually build out the grid. And so these things are going to be with us this decade, because you have no idea on this transition to AI, to cloud computing, to cryptocurrencies, to EVs, the massive amount of demand it's going to put on our electricity grid. And as I mentioned, the smarter companies, take Amazon, take Microsoft, where most of their revenues are coming from this, they are coming on with their own nuclear power plants. And here's one thing I think you have unity in the country. Both parties, Democrats and Republicans, agree with nuclear power. The one thing holding it back is the Nuclear Regulatory Agency. And you even had Governor Whitmer in Michigan, who is trying to restart a nuclear power plant, and basically said, hey, if I don't get the permission of the NRC, I'm going to put in micro nuclear plants so we can have electricity that's reliable, because wind and solar, as we know, is not reliable on much of the country. So this energy transition is an area that we're looking at. And I think this is going to be a long-term theme. You can't have the kind of demands that are coming from technology in this energy transition on the electrical grid without companies that are going to help rebuild that grid and, more importantly, power that grid.
So, Jim, as you mentioned, we're invested in gold and silver. We're investing in AI-related companies. We just took profits on our crypto-related investment. We're long-term investors in energy for many of the reasons that you just cited and laid out. I do want to come back to inflation again here, because I think this relates to how most investors think about bonds and how inflation does impact bonds. You touched upon this with Jim Welsh in our last segment, so I'd like to get your view on this specifically. How does the longer-term inflationary environment, as you see it, impact the way you are investing clients' money for bonds?
One of the areas that we're very fortunate, we have a bond desk and we deal with probably 25 of the world's largest bond dealers. Because we see inflation as a persistent theme this decade, what we're doing, Chris, we're buying individual bonds. We're keeping the maturities between 2 and 3 years. The reason I like that is, number one, I know exactly what my interest rate's going to be. If I buy a bond and it's paying me 6%, I know that every 6 months I'm going to get a 6% annualized interest payment. More importantly, that bond comes due in 3 years. I know I'm going to get my money back, and it's going to be exactly what I invest. If I bought a $10,000 bond, I'm getting $10,000 back. So we see interest rates rising throughout this decade. And as Jim Welsh has talked about, we have now entered a new bear market cycle for bonds. And you can see this if you pull up a chart of TLT, which is 20-year treasuries, very popular ETF for owning bonds. That has been down 3 years in a row. And one thing that is not working, and this is just a warning to investors, because the industry is gravitated and adhere to this 60-40 portfolio when it comes to investing, 60% stocks, 40% bonds, mainly through ETFs and bond funds. So the idea was, and it worked well for, you know, several decades, if the stock market went down, usually because we're entering into recession, what happened is the bond market went up. So in the great financial crisis between 2007 and 2009, when the stock market lost 60%, the bond market was up 25, 30%. So it helped to offset, mitigate the losses in your portfolio. That did not work in 2022 when we had the, what I think the S&P was down close to 25%, the NASDAQ was down 33%, and the bond market was down 25%. So investors got hammered on both sides of their portfolio. They lost money in bonds, they lost money in stocks. So what we prefer to do is keep our maturity short. We stay with high quality bonds, whether it's treasuries or corporates, so we don't have the risk of rising interest rates, because when interest rates rise, they lower the value of bonds with lower coupons. And so that is something It's kind of funny. It kind of brings me back to when I got started in this career in the early 80s. We were dealing with 15.5% on treasury bonds. We were dealing with a prime rate at 21% as we were experiencing almost 14 to 15% inflation. Remember when gold went from basically $35 an ounce to $800, silver went from what, 50 cents to $1.50 all the way to $50. It was a decade of inflation, commodities rising, and along with that came rising inflation, rising interest rates. And so what we did back then is we did laddered bond portfolios. And just to tell you what happens if you're not careful, I'll remember this. It was one of the first financial plans I was working on. I think that it was like 1981. And this gentleman was a president of a Fortune 500 company, retired, put his money in long-term bonds, treasuries, and munis when interest rates were 2 and 3%. And here we were dealing with, you know, 15% interest rates on treasuries. We were dealing with 9 and 10% interest rates on municipal bonds. And his $750,000 bond portfolio was only worth about $400,000 because interest rates had just skyrocketed from where he bought. And that's what you're going to be seeing in this decade. And that's one reason why we're keeping our maturity short. And that way, we don't have to worry about as interest rates rise, as our bonds mature, we roll them over at higher interest rates, which has been happening here for the last 3 years.
So when it comes to what we're talking about with these macro themes, the way that this is connected directly to the way we're positioning clients on the bond side is there's two real key things, it sounds like, Jim. The first is the fact that we do see modern monetary theory and deficit spending continuing moving forward. We have seen that. We don't think that that is going away. That is inflationary. Along with that, of course, we see a continual erosion of the U.S.'s fiscal position. And that means that investors around the globe, as Jim Welsh talked about in the last segment, are going to require a higher compensation rate for that increased risk because U.S. debt has been downgraded. We will likely, very likely, continue to see more downgrades to come as debt levels continue to climb, as interest expense goes up. So that is going to lead to higher interest rates. And as you said, this aligns with a longer term bear market in bonds. But that doesn't mean we're saying you don't invest in bonds. It just means you need to invest in individual bonds and short term as well, and then use the higher interest rate environment that we believe that we are going to be in over this next decade to roll over those bonds at those higher yields. So explain some of the differences between what we do and what you'll see in a traditional firm.
The difference is we actually buy individual stocks, we buy individual bonds, and that comes from two things. Number one, our view on inflation long term. Because, Chris, I began my career in an inflationary environment coming out of the 70s, the early 80s, and I saw the devastation to bond funds, bond portfolios. Bond funds weren't as prevalent back then. So by keeping our interest rates in high quality bonds, shorter term, I reduced the risk of higher interest rates and inflation. So if inflation continues to go up, you're going to see bond yields continue to go up. And I can take advantage of that. If I'm only going out 2 or 3 years, you know, if let's say I buy a 3-year bond at the end of this year, it becomes a 2-year bond. So it has less volatility, less, let's say, loss if interest rates rise, because in 3 years, if I put $10,000 or $100,000 in that bond, I get my $100,000 back and I'm able to invest that for my clients at a higher interest rate. So they're going to see increasing income as rates rise instead of decreasing income or losses in the bond portfolio. Because as interest rates rise, a bond fund manager, the principal goes down, investors see the loss in the portfolio or their mutual fund or ETF. What do? They pull their money out. What does that force the manager to do? He is forced to go out in the marketplace and sell those bonds because a lot of times, some of the bonds that we were able to locate, my bond team on the bond desk, will come and we have relationships with 25 managers. So if somebody has to get out of a bond, a mutual fund is liquidating because their clients are liquidating their mutual fund, they'll come to us many times and they're in a desperate situation. They need to unload these bonds and we're able to take advantage of it. So it's one of the ways that we think that we can protect clients in a rising interest rate environment.
So just to summarize some of what we discussed today, we're investing around these long-term themes. Precious metals, commodities, energy, crypto, and AI are all part of this. As we did mention, we took profits on our recent crypto investment after a very explosive move, but we will likely be deploying back into crypto. We do see this as a long-term theme. And Jim, you don't think that these are things that we're going to see play out over a period of months or even just a year or two, but likely for the remainder of this decade?
Yeah, if you want to boil it down to some simple things of how this is going to play out, we are moving from an economy that has been dominated by consumer spending. Consumers are going to start getting squeezed. You're already seeing that with the depletion of the savings rate. All those government checks that were handed out during COVID and the lockdown, that they've been spending that down. Consumer debt is now being powered by basically borrowing. You're seeing credit card debt go up at record levels. And so we don't think the consumer is going to have the spending power going forward because they're going to get hurt by what I call rising taxes and inflation. It's amazing. It was a theme that I began my career with, taxes and inflation. And here we are 40 years later, taxes and inflation. I can tell you this, if the Trump tax cuts expire in 2026, poor and middle-class people are going to see their taxes because the tax rates are higher on lower levels of income because that's where the bulk of the tax cuts took place. Consumers are going to be hit with inflation. The Wall Street Journal did a beautiful article yesterday, front page of the Wall Street Journal, on just the cost of food going up between 40, 50, and 70%. That's not stopping. That's going to go forward. And as Jim talked about, now we're starting to see the grains, everything from sugar to cocoa go up. What does that mean? It's going to translate into higher food costs. So what we think is going to be the dominant theme economically this decade is going to be infrastructure. I mean, I live in a state that's becoming almost a third world country. We have potholes everywhere you go. This is the third year, Chris, I've had to replace a rim and a flat tire because everywhere you drive around the city, you're potholes. We're seeing bridges need repair. The grid needs to be strengthened to handle the demands that are going to be put on it. So instead of consumerism, a big theme my investment team is working on is infrastructure. Number two, inflation is going to be with us this entire decade. And so what does that mean? You're going to see a lot of technological advances, whether it's AI or automation and robots. Folks, next couple of years, don't be surprised if you have a domestic robot in your household. So that is a theme. Energy and electricity shortages. So we're looking, as I mentioned, we're invested in energy. We're also looking at electricity shortages, what's going to enhance the grid. And because of inflation and rising interest rates, we see a long-term bear market in bonds, which is why we're buying individual bonds and we're keeping our duration short. And Chris, these are themes that we see playing out. And you know, the thing I'm excited about is what we're coming up with our investment team on what we see in infrastructure, strengthening the grid. There's a lot of opportunities and nobody's paying much attention to this right now, which affords us a better opportunity.
So fascinating things ahead, many long-term investment themes, again, that all tie into what we discussed. And if any of you would like to come on board with us at Financial Sense Wealth Management, we have been ranked as one of the top RIAs in the U.S. by the Financial Times. Give us a call at 888-486-3939, or you can also visit our client website, which is financialsensewealth.com.
You know, Chris, as we close, I just want to emphasize on the themes that we've been talking about. If you're watching the financial markets, you're seeing gold prices hit new highs each day. You're seeing oil prices go up. You've seen crypto, big moves in crypto over the last 12 months. I want to point out, we are still, in our belief, phase one of a long-term bull market. And so if you see this, it's not too late. This is just the beginning. And I think back, Chris, when we were doing our podcast in the 00 decade, when gold was somewhere around, it was below, I think it was around 250 in the year 2000, silver was way down, oil prices were at $20 a barrel, and it started to go up. And then oil went from 20, it went to 50. Gold went from 250, it went to 500, 600, 800, and then it started going up. This is still the early phase, in our opinion. As all bull markets have three phases, this is phase one. So it's just the beginning. So if you would like to get on board this trend, give us a call at 888-486-3939. And we'd be glad to talk to you about how these kind of trends that we've been discussing here could impact your portfolio planning for the next decade. In the meantime, on behalf of Chris Sheridan and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on the Financial Sense News Hour. Until we talk again, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the News Hour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.